97.5, The Fanatic.
Pleasant Sunday afternoon to you and yours. Hope you're staying safe, happy, and healthy. And welcome into 97.5 The Fanatic. The number, as always, to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli, Matt Menark, we take you from 12 until 4 o'clock this afternoon on the heels of another enjoyable show from one half of Wake and Bake Radio. That, of course, was Andrew Salchunas. Jamie Lynch off today after the morning show guys had an opportunity to take the trip to Vegas this weekend for the NFL draft to take in all the festivities and to have some fun. We are here for 4 hours. We have a full 4 hour run with you today, and we have a ton to get into. So let's jump right into things. When you speak of the NFL draft, and you speak of any draft, quite frankly, to be fair, it is very, very difficult to speak in absolutes. There are so few absolutes in any type of draft that they are really conversationally easy to pick out. When you think about the absolutes of any particular professional draft over the last, you could even say 20 years, I could tell you that there are very few players in baseball, basketball, football, hockey, soccer that were so unbelievably universally decided upon that I could count that on like one hand. Like, it's LeBron James off the top of my head. It's LeBron James. It's Sidney Crosby. It's Connor McDavid. Bryce Harper is one of them. But the number that is so universally decided upon in a positive direction is very, very finite. And therefore, it's very difficult to speak in total absolutes when it comes to projections of draft prospects. And so without speaking in absolutes, I'm going to speak in about as close to an absolute as I possibly can today with my understanding of the collegiate football landscape, with my understanding of how Howie Roseman operates, with my understanding of how the NFL is set to take shape over the next couple of years. In the closest way to an absolute without giving you an absolute, the Philadelphia Eagles had a slam dunk home run smash success weekend over the last 72 hours. It began on Thursday night when they moved up two spots and gave up minimal draft picks, a couple of fives and a four, to move up two spots to jump the Baltimore Ravens and select Jordan Davis, the massive human being that played defensive tackle from the University of Georgia. He was the front line of that incredible Georgia front four in the run-stuffing category. And then just a few moments later, the Eagles then once again make another move, and they trade their first-round pick and their third-round pick in exchange to the Tennessee Titans in exchange for A.J. Brown. The next day, a lot of people with frustrations over a pick that was not necessarily a need, but a bonus pick. But it seems to me that it was the outright replacement handpicked by Jason Kelce in Cam Jurgens, the center out of Nebraska. A few moments later, or a few, I guess an hour or so later, the Eagles potentially get the steal of the entirety of the draft, a player that was considered to be a top 20 to 32 player, a first-round talent, where all of a sudden these injury concerns popped up and he fell to 83, and the Eagles get a player of the caliber of N'Kobe Dean at 83. Then you flash forward to the third day of the draft. And nothing that the Eagles did was fancy or overly spectacular when it came to the final four rounds of the draft. It was clearly evident that the Eagles wanted Tariq Woolen at 154. It was clearly evident by the fact that the moment that he was selected with the 153rd pick by the Seattle Seahawks, the Eagles were looking for a trade partner. And they found one in the Jacksonville Jaguars. They eventually traded up one of those picks to get to 181 to take Kyron Johnson, the inside linebacker, well, the linebacker, I should say, from Kansas, because he did line up as a defensive end as well. And they wrapped up the draft with the 198th pick, selecting Grant Calcaterra, the tight end from SMU. But that's not where this ends. It goes even a step further. And the Eagles, for all intents and purposes, had the best UDFA signings in the NFL. I'm not so sure they had the best draft in the NFL. I think that category belongs to the New York Jets and the Baltimore Ravens. I believe those both of those two teams were sensational this weekend. But I do believe that they had the best UDFA class of every single team in the NFL. First and foremost, you get a quarterback of the ilk of Carson Strong, who I understand has some substantial injury concerns. But I also recognize that if he can be on the field, and you guys have heard me say this with Tom Alvord, you've heard me say this with Devon Givens, you've heard me say this just about every time I have the opportunity to, I am not a big Carson Strong fan for where I expected him to be selected, which was like the early third round. The fact that he wasn't taken at all, this is a great selection or a great pickup as a UDFA prospect. They get Kennedy Brooks, a star running back at Oklahoma. Again, a guy that I thought might go in the latter stages of the draft, maybe somewhere between the late fifth and early seventh round. They get him as a UDFA as well. They acquire Noah Ellis, a large interior lineman, defensive lineman from the University of Idaho. And I understand you're going to go, well, what's in Idaho? It's like potatoes. That's what they've got. Well, they've got a football team as well. And while they have gone down to the FCS level in the last couple of seasons, Noah Ellis is a big body who can give you something defensively. And I'm not expecting him to be this, you know, world-class defensive tackle, but I do think he's another guy that I thought was going to be drafted. And the fact that he wasn't is pretty impressive. All in all, in the least, or I guess in the closest way to complete and utter absolutes, which I'm trying not to do because I'm not a Sith Lord and I don't deal in absolutes here. This isn't Star Wars. The Eagles had as close to a slam dunk home run out of this world, 100% strong NFL draft weekend. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. I cannot stress enough how excited I am with the moves that were made by the Eagles this weekend. And I can't tell you how many times I've left draft weekend going, oh, here we go again. You didn't take this guy. You let this guy fall. You didn't take this player. And every year, and I know that we can't, and this is why we can't play in absolutes, because I do believe that you have to give players time to develop and grow into the NFL player that they're going to be. But sometimes, every once in a while, I just want to be able to say, that's the player that the rest of the league is going to take notice of. That's the player that the rest of the league is going to regret not taking. You can name those players very easily. It's DK Metcalf. It's Maurice Jones-Drew. There's a lot of guys over the last 20 years and in the totality of the NFL draft that you look back and go, man, every other team in the draft passed on this guy, and some passed on him multiple times, and now he plays for my team. I have never felt that way, or let me rephrase that. We've not felt that way probably since, like, Jason Kelce, who was a sixth-round pick, but it took him a while to develop. So maybe you even go back a step further, and I've not felt that way since, dare I say, Brian Westbrook, who was a third-round selection out of Villanova the year that he was drafted. And now, in recent memory, in recent times, aka this weekend, I have the opportunity to sit here and come on these airwaves and tell you that the Eagles got the player that every other team is going to regret not being able to take if he can stay healthy. And that is N'Kobe Dean. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. I am over the moon excited about what has transpired over the course of this weekend when it comes to the Eagles. I know that we have to wait and see what happens. I know that we have to wait and let this thing play out as is. And you've got to give it some time to understand who can play and who is just a good college player. But I cannot be more thrilled with the move that the Eagles made over the last 72 hours. And that is where we bring our second member of the program into today's show. Our producer this afternoon is Matt Menark. Matt, first and foremost, good afternoon. Hope your weekend's been good. And are you as excited as I am about what has transpired over the last 72 hours?
First, good afternoon to you too, Tyler. Yeah, I'm completely on board with you. When it comes to the Eagles draft, I'm excited too. We basically got a first rounder in the third round. So
you got a first round talent in the third round. There's no doubt in my mind.
I understand people are a little, some people are upset about the quantity of draft picks, but I'd rather go with quality over quantity. So we have the potential to have, I mean, a slam dunk draft class. I don't know much about the Kyron Johnson, but from what I've read, he could be a contributor on the team as well.
So one thing that you said to me, you texted me yesterday. I'd just gotten off the air, and you texted me and said, "Hey," and in fact, let me read it because I want to give it its proper due. You texted me yesterday afternoon. It was 3:54. You said, "Quote: Is Kyron Johnson going to help deep depth guy or some sort of contributor?" End quote. And I responded with you. You know I watch a lot of college football. You know that I watch college football at probably an unhealthy level. Like, I'm the guy that sat and watched UConn-UMass just because I thought that it was going to be funny. Because it was like two of the worst football teams I've ever seen. And I responded with you, or to you with that text. I said, I love college football. I watch it at an unhealthy level. But I don't hate myself nearly enough to watch Kansas football. So the answer to your question is, I don't know what Kyron Johnson brings you. I believe in transparency, and I will be upfront and honest with you. The only time this season that I watched Kansas football was the day that they were on the brink of upsetting Texas this season. And I only watched the second half because I had gotten wind that they were on the brink of upsetting Texas. So I got to be honest, I can't give you any kind of definitive answer on what kind of player he is going to turn out to be. But I can give you definitive answers on the Kobe Dean, and if he stays healthy, the kind of athlete that he is, the kind of intangibles that he brings. Everybody that you hear from N'Kobe Dean says that he is the captain of your defense, the smartest guy on your defense. He's cerebral. He knows where to be, when to be, and how to be there. And on top of that, he is a darn good football player. I don't know how healthy he actually is. And I've got to be honest with you, Matt, I don't particularly care. Now, and what I mean by that is, not that I don't care if he gets healthy. Of course, I want the young man to get healthy. What I mean by that is, if he is hurt to an extent that is greater than what Howie Roseman believes, that is greater than what even he has said, and he does not play it down in 2022, but he's ready to go in 2023, you now have a first-round talent from a third-round pick that you're going to be able to unleash on your opponents, on opposite offenses, that you get without having to actually spend a pick, if that makes sense. Like, if you can think at it from like a different sort of way, you're thinking about, how can my first-round pick provide for me this year? How can my second-round pick? How can my free agents? How can my trades provide for me this year? If you put him on ice, if you give him a redshirt rookie season and he comes out and plays for you in year two and he's healthy and he's fast and he's strong and he's physical and he can play a little bit in coverage and he can give you pass rush, you're going to feel like you got a bonus pick because you didn't pick him in the 2023 draft. I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but the point about N'Kobe Dean that I'm trying to make is, for the first time since at least Jason Kelsey, but he was passed up a billion times by a billion different teams. So probably more so, for the first time since Brian Westbrook was selected, I feel like the Eagles got themselves the steal of the draft in N'Kobe Dean. And it's one small portion as to why I am so excited about what the Eagles have done over the last 72 hours.
Yeah, and to your point, he is going to be worth waiting for. Like you said, if he has to sit out for however many weeks or the whole year, he's going to be worth waiting for because he is that good of a player. And he could turn our linebacking core from one of our weaknesses into one of our strengths because he's just going to make, well, with the additions that we have plus his addition, that just adds these younger players we have.
Sure.
As depth players that could develop, and it could linebacker could end up being one of our strengths on the team.
I'm not sitting here and telling you that one player in Nakobe Dean is going to make the linebacking core go from traffic cones to elite, right? We're not talking about you didn't bring in three Ray Lewis's or three, star stud type.
Mike Singletary.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right. Like, you didn't bring... But Nakobe Dean is somebody that is going to jumpstart that
right.
And make your linebacking core better. Now, what you've done with him, what you do with Jordan Davis, what you'd even potentially do with a guy like Kyron Johnson and Patrick Johnson, some of the guys that you've selected over the last couple of years, it wouldn't shock me if this team starts to kind of run some hybrid stuff where you see some 3-4 defensive schemes. With Jordan Davis as the nose tackle, the big nose tackle in the middle. We'll talk more about that as we continue. 610-632-0975. At 1:30, we're going to be joined by Andrew DiCecco of Inside the Birds to discuss all things that the Eagles have done, to discuss the draft as a whole. He is, like myself, even maybe further, a college football and draft nut. So I'm looking forward to speaking with
him. Is that possible?
There's a small sample, a small percentage of people that are, and he might fit that bill.
Wow.
So very much looking forward to speaking with Andrew at 1:30. We'll check in with him. We're also going to get into the Sixers conversation later in the show as the Sixers and Heat get set to do battle to get set with game one tomorrow night at 7:30. Of course, you can hear that game on 97.5 The Fanatic. I'll be honest with you, and we'll get to this a little bit later. I don't feel great about this series. The Embiid injury is concerning. I don't know how long or how many games he's going to be able to play. The matchup is not perfect to me. I think that the Heat have a tremendous offense, and they're going to be able to score whenever and however they want at times. And we'll talk more about that as we continue the show. We're here until 4 o'clock. Let's start things off on the phones. We're going to go to East Windsor. We'll talk to Mitch on the Fanatic. What's up, Mitch? Mitch. All right, we're going to put Mitch on hold, Matt, if you don't mind just grabbing him real quick. We'll get to him in just a second. And while we do, we'll speak to Tom in Alabama up next in the Fanatic. What's up, Tom?
Hey, brother. What's going on, man?
How you doing, Tom? Appreciate you making the call today.
Thank you for taking the call, man. I'm excited, too. You know, over the last 40 years, all four professional organizations in Philadelphia seem to have one thing in common, and that's they've never had good drafts, you know, historically. And Howie Roseman, you know, no matter what, I'm always going to look at Howie Roseman because he won the Super Bowl. He took an upside-down roster and turned it around from
sure.
a wannabe college coach. And believe me, and I banged him over the years and a lot of calls on another deal. But the thing what really says right now where I'm happy where I'm at with him, last year's draft, I thought he blew it on Dickerson and, you know, one or two other guys.
Okay.
McLeod, I think. But, Dickerson's come through, which is a lineman, which is something, you know. But the deal...
You always need linemen. Like, I understand it's not the sexy pick, but you always need offensive linemen.
No doubt. And the thing about, like, with Juergens, I mean, that he went with input on Kelsey, which is good.
Yep.
But he was on the clock for me when, and it wasn't his fault, with either, I don't know if it was his fault or not, when Wentz pulled his deal when he drafted Hurts in the second round. Mm-hmm. And then Wentz got spooked or whatever. And, you know, I said right there, I said, you better get me back another number one, like, you know, in the top five.
Sure.
Well, man, what he did for Wentz, they should arrest what he got back for Wentz.
It was theft, I think.
Let alone,
quite frankly,
just a contract. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But those additional draft picks, and with this to me, I've been following the Eagles for. I'm 55. I've known what's going on since I was 50.
Sure.
50 years, man. I'm telling you, it looks on paper to be the best. And like you were saying about Dean, I mean, Dean has a chance. Both of them have a chance, like Kelce, Johnson, Graham, Cox, to be 10-year guys and put an imprint on the organization.
Sure, I think so.
But Dean could possibly exceed Davis, but then again, he might not. But, you know, Gowan from last year's cornerback. Obviously, they're still the cornerback and the safety deal.
Correct. Yep, that is one thing that they definitely still need to address. It's some capacity in free agency.
You know, but the thing, too, is my brother, he kept the two number ones for next year,
yep,
which is key. And then I believe it's two twos in the second the following year, correct?
I believe you are correct. I think that that's the correct. And Tom, thanks so much for the phone call. Really appreciate you starting us off today. Listen, I am not going to be so I'm trying my best not to sit here and tell you that Howie Roseman is absolved of every sin that he's ever committed with this organization. I'm trying my best to not sit here and tell you that the Eagles are going to, you know, go to the Super Bowl. Like, that's not what I'm trying to, I'm not trying to make it sound like that's the case. And I understand you probably could sit here and take my first 21 minutes on the air and go, oh man, this guy's fanboying over here. Like, this is embarrassing. And I hope that you know by now that that is not the kind of show host or producer that I am. I like to believe that I'm very cerebral and conversational and kind of tactical, if you will, with my thought processes when it comes to drafts, when it comes to the Eagles, and it comes to all of the teams that we are accustomed to discussing. This, to me, from an objective standpoint, like, I will tell you who I think had better drafts than the Eagles. I will tell you when the Eagles had bad drafts. I think that the Jets had a better draft than the Eagles. They secured three first-round players. That's sensational to be able to do. I think that the Baltimore Ravens had a better draft than the Eagles did. I think that there are certain teams that had equally good drafts. I think that the Kansas City Chiefs had a great draft. I think the New York Giants had a great draft. I think there's a lot of good draft talent that has come out of the draft this past weekend and has helped a lot of teams. So I'm not trying to sit here and tell you that I'm, you know, going 17-0 fanboy over the moon about the Eagles' upcoming season, but I will say this. The Eagles have built themselves a roster that allows them to compete for a long time should these guys be able to play at a high level. Like Tom was just speaking of. I don't know if N'Kobe Dean is a 10-year linebacker. I don't know if anybody is a 10-year anything. I don't know if I'm a 10-year radio host. I don't know if you are going to spend 10 years at your job. But I know this. The Eagles have put themselves in a position to perhaps get a 10-year linebacker who had first-round upside in the third round of the draft. That right in and of itself is enough for me to be excited. And then on top of that, the UDFA class was strong. I think that they did a tremendous job. We haven't even scratched the surface about the acquisition of A.J. Brown. We'll continue to do that as well. I think that the Eagles had themselves an incredible, incredible weekend. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. We're going to get back to Mitch in just a second on the other side. We'll get to Andrew, Charles, and Nick as well. And, of course, Andrew Dzieciecko will check in with us at 1:30 today. 610-632-0975. That's Matt Minarek. I'm Tyler Zulli. We take you until 4 right here on 97.5
The Fanatic. 97.5
The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
.31 here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Let that live for a little bit. So, Matt Minarek, who's our producer today, tasked himself with finding out what everybody who does, you know, who hosts shows, like, what kind of music they like. And Matt and I have had many music conversations before, because he and I are similarly, we think similarly when it comes to music. And he said, hey, give me some bands you like. I gave him a couple bands, and he picked a couple bands and spoken about music. And he's gotten us some really awesome return music. So, Matt, thank you very much for your help with the return music. I'm Tyler Zuli. That's Matt Menarik. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. Do have a music question for you in about 5 minutes' time. I'm going to ask you, Matt, and I'll ask our callers as well. But before we get there and before we get back to the phones, 11 minutes ago, Adrian Wojnarowski tweets, ESPN sources, Joel Embiid will not travel for games 1 and 2 in Miami. Kind of expected that. Kind of figured that might be the case. But there is optimism that he could return as soon as either game 3 or game 4 in Philadelphia. He needs to clear concussion protocol and see doctor midweek on his orbital fracture. More to come on his show at 12:30. That is about the best news that I could possibly ask for when it comes to this Joel Embiid injury. Quite frankly, I did not expect him to, and I still don't expect him to play in this series. I'm just being frank with you. I'm being honest with you. I think that they're going to tell him that the orbital fracture is unplayable or that he's not going to clear concussion protocol. I just have this, I'm not a doctor. I don't have any medical clearances to say these things. I'm not a professional by any means. Do not consult me with your medical problems, because I will tell you to the completely wrong thing. I don't expect to see him play, if I'm just being honest with ourselves. I really do not expect to see him play. But this is the best news that we could ask for from a health and safety standpoint, if he is able to clear concussion protocol. That's big step number one, is he clears concussion protocol. Step number two is, how is the orbital fracture and is it playable? Meaning, like, can he wear a mask? Can he wear goggles? Does he need either of those things to play, or is it not playable? I have had just a really sick feeling in the pit of my stomach that he's not going to play. But this news is very, very, very encouraging.
Yeah, and if they could steal one in Miami and he could possibly play in 3 or 4, then they're heading in the right direction. But I'm going to wait to determine what I think until I hear how this fracture is, because that word fracture, it has such a wide range.
So much.
It could be a hairline fracture.
Right.
It could be a big, we just know the word fracture, so we don't know the degree of it yet.
Neither you nor I are medical experts.
Not even close.
By any means. But you're correct. You could be out a bit of time. You could be out a long, substantial amount of time. We're going to have to see. I don't know how this thing's going to be very fluid through the next, let's say, 72 hours or so. But we'll continue to discuss that in just a little bit. News from the Miami Heat has dropped as well. They have dropped their injury report. Kyle Lowry has been ruled out for game 1 with a hamstring injury. Morris, Martin, Tucker, Strus, Butler, and Hero are all listed as questionable with a myriad of different injuries and illnesses. Morris, non-COVID. Martin, ankle. Tucker, calf. Strus, hamstring. Butler, knee. Hero, respiratory illness. These two teams are going into this so banged up. And that is the perils of a long season, off the perils of a shortened season, or an elongated season in terms of time. It was a shortened season in terms of games, but the season ended later last year. It began at regular time this year, meaning that the offseason was shorter. Both of these teams made the playoffs last year. Now, neither of them made a whole heck of a lot of noise, but they did play well into the month of May, and the Sixers played almost until June. It was Father's Day when they lost game 7. These two teams are going to come into the series really, really banged up. We'll talk more about it on the other side. But before we get back to the phones, I want to ask you this question, Matt, and then I want to get our answers from our callers as well. I know that, like we said, you and I are very similarly, we think similarly when it comes to music. There is a band, and I don't know if you know them or not, but they're called Northlane. They are a, well, they were a, they're still, I guess, technically considered in the metalcore genre, but they were more metalcore, straightforward metalcore when they first started. They got a new singer a couple albums ago, and the last two albums have been a little bit more electronic metal, if you will. Like, there's a lot more synth, there's a lot more keyboard, there's a lot of computer-generated sounds and noises and music, right? And their last album, which was the first to really feature that prominently, was really, really, really good. Really good. The problem is, their newest album, which just came out, which I was super excited about, I was very much looking forward to hearing this album. And the album dropped last week, and I tweeted this out, but you know, I tried to give it another listen today, and I unfortunately finished with the same result. The album was just very, like, kind of plain to me. It didn't jump out to me. It didn't grab my attention right away, and I was pretty disappointed. I'm not going to lie to you. I was pretty disappointed in the results of the album that I was very much looking forward to. Now, this happens all the time when you're a fan of a band or an artist or a singer or whatever the case may be. But that, to me, was the first time in a really long time where I heard an album, like a full album, not a single, not one song, but a full album. And I went, well, that's kind of disappointing. So I want to ask you, do you have any artists that are like that? It doesn't have to be recent, but that dropped an album that you were highly anticipating that just was not very good?
That reminds me of Avenged Sevenfold, because they seem to be lately changing.
I am so happy you said that.
They seem to be changing their style or trying different things with the last few albums.
And I'm going to put it to you this way. I have no issue if a musician or a band or an artist says, I want to try something creatively different. It's your music. It's your money. It's your time and effort. You do whatever you want with your music. But you are also then subject to longtime fans saying, well, I don't like this.
Yeah, so like I wasn't, their first few, well, their very first album, not a big fan of Sounding the Seven Trumpets, I think it is. But
yes.
After that, Waking the Fallen, their self-titled one,
yep.
That's Avenged Sevenfold to me. Now they come out with the stage and all that stuff, then they're trying to change their style a little. It just doesn't grab me as much.
So I have a buddy who is similar to us in music enjoyment, and he adores the stage. He thinks it's incredible. I'm with you. I didn't like it all that much. So I want to ask you and all of our friends today at 610-632-0975 when you join us for Sixers conversation, when you join us for Eagles conversation, was there at any time an artist or a band or a musician that you're a big fan of that came out with an album that really, really disappointed you? Because that's what happened with me with this band Northlane very recently, is I just don't like their new album. All right, again, the number to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. Mitch is back with us on The Fanatic. What's up, Mitch? Mitch. All right, we gave Mitch two chances. You don't have to go back to it. It's okay. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Charles next in the Northeast. What's up, Charles?
How you doing, Tyler?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you making the phone call. I haven't had a chance to talk to you in a while.
Oh, Tyler, always great hearing you. And I love your opinions. But let me say this. I got on the Eagles and Sixers very quickly.
Sure, you got time.
On the Eagles, and listen, I wasn't a fan of the drafts. I've been a Howie Roseman defender.
Yep.
But the drafts before the last two, I wasn't fans of. He didn't have great drafts. But the last two drafts, Tyler and a certain guy from King of Prussia isn't going to like to hear this. I think he hit it out of the park. And here's why. Because, especially this year, I thought last year's draft was excellent. I think this year's draft is even better. Because I think it does two things. It sets the Eagles up for success this year, which I feel now they're clearly better than Washington, clearly better than the Giants. I'm not going to tell you, and I can't say they're better than Dallas right now because they've got to prove that on the field.
Sure.
But I'll tell you this. Talent-wise, they're close. They're very close. He set them up to compete against Dallas this year, but also in future years, Tyler, because, look, even if N'Kobe Dean can't play this year, have we made a great under-the-radar signing getting Kazir White from the Chargers? I think he's going to be on the field and be an impact right away. The same with Javion Taylor. And you really fortified that line with Davies. Now, I probably would have taken the safety there, but I don't have a big problem with what Howie did because you needed to fortify that defensive line. So I think he set him up for success this year and in future years. So I give this draft an overwhelming A.
I think it was a tremendous draft, and I you know, even go back to the draft you were referencing a year ago. Every single player that the Eagles selected in some form, whether it be special teams, it be contributor, it be key contributor like Dickerson and Smith and, you know, even Kenny Gainwell to a lesser extent. Every single player that the Eagles selected a year ago played with the actual 53-man roster at some point throughout the season. Now, some of it was a necessity out of necessity because of injury or lack of depth or whatever the case may be. But even they had three picks in the sixth or seventh round. Deron Jackson played in all 17 games. Patrick Johnson played in all 17 games. Jacoby Stevens played in the final two games of the year. Every single player that they took in the draft last year had some sort of contribution to the Eagles, at least suiting up and playing special teams. I think this year you're going to get a similar outcome at least with four of the five players they selected.
Absolutely. I remember with the trade for A.J. Brown, he is your 18th draft pick, basically. That's why they got him.
Correct.
And we're going to see about Jalen Hurts this year. People down on Jalen Hurts? Okay, I'm a fan of Jalen Hurts, but we'll see this year because Howie's giving him the weapons. Now for the Sixers, Tyler.
Yes.
Listen, Embiid injury is a devastating loss. There's no question about it. The guy's a top three player in the NBA.
For sure.
But I don't think he's done yet, okay? I think, I'm the opposite of you. I think if he clears and he doesn't need anything else in that eye, there's no doubt in my mind he's going to play with the mask.
Oh, for sure. No. What I was saying was prior to this report, if he clears, I think he's 100% going to play. I just had a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach that he wasn't going to.
I got a good feeling. I don't think he's going to need surgery. But here's the thing. Now, the question is, can the Sixers win one of the first two in Miami? And I give a resounding yes to that, Tyler, and here's why. Miami's banged up themselves, number one.
Correct.
Number two, I heard you say, we're going to disagree with this, that Miami has this great offense. I disagree with that. I think Miami's defense is great. I think their offense is very good, but it's sporadic. I've watched a lot of Heat games this year, Tyler. I've seen that offense sputter a lot.
Let me rephrase what I said a little bit. When they're clicking, right, especially when they're knocking down the three, they are a difficult offense to defend.
I agree with that, but they don't always do it, though. And
sure.
My thing is, I think the Sixers, I think you're going to see more from Maxey, obviously. I think you saw a little glimpse that James Harden isn't through like people think he is against the Raptors. And I just think the Sixers, listen, it's a devastating loss, but I think Embiid will be back. I think they can win one of these first two. I actually think they're going to win game one, and I think if that happens, they're in great shape. But I will say this, though, Tyler, the overall long, even if Embiid comes back, and listen, it kills me to say this, I think the best team in the East right now, and maybe the best team in basketball,
it might be the Boston Celtics.
It's Boston. And I hate to say that, but I got to be real with you. I think that team's 9-10 guys deep. I think they're going to beat Milwaukee in five or six games. And right now, to me, they're the favorite to go. I think them and Golden State are the favorites to go to the finals.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing. And Charles, thanks so much for the phone call. Really appreciate you checking in with us all the time. I think that Boston's playing as good of basketball as just about anybody in the NBA right now. And in fact, the show that's on ESPN right now is talking about them. I had the Bucks and Suns repeating as Eastern and Western Conference champions. I thought that they were the two best teams almost the entirety of the season in the East and the West. Obviously, with Chris Middleton hurt, it hurts them. With Devin Booker hurt, it hurts the Suns. The Boston Celtics are clicking right now. Ime Udoka's done a tremendous job with the Celtics and what they've become, especially after a slow start. And, you know, the conversations surrounding the Celtics were, oh, can Tatum and Brown play together? Do they have enough defense? Are they are they going to be able to match up defensively with some of the longer, more, you know, good shooting teams after Marcus Smart and Robert Williams? This is a good Boston team, and they are playing as well as just about anybody in the league right now. Charles is correct. It sucks to say. I hate saying it. You know, and I'm not somebody, I don't even hate, like, I know Devon hates the Celtics. I know there's a lot of people here that hate the Celtics. I don't feel that way about the Celtics that others do. But I still don't like them. And it is difficult for me to sit here and tell you, like, wow, they're really good. But they're really good.
Oh, they are. Yeah. I hate everything about Boston, too, all their sports teams. But, yeah, good or bad, whether you like them, love them, whatever, I mean, you got to give them credit. They're playing great right now. So, I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the finals, but we got to worry about – we'll worry about Boston if we could get past Miami.
You got to worry about Miami first and foremost. I think that here's – so let's finish up his Sixers point, and then we'll get to the Eagles point that he made in just a second. The Sixers, much like every team that doesn't get Game 1 and Game 2 on the road, the thought process is take a game. On the road, take a game in games one or two and get back to your home court with the series tied 1-1. That's obviously easier said than done, but there's a second aspect to that take a game on the road that doesn't get talked about enough because you just assume that this is what your team is supposed to do. If you take that game, whether it be game one or game two, on the road in Miami, it then also does become imperative that you win both your games at home if you want to get a commanding 3-1 series lead. Now, that also sounds easier said than done, but what I mean, why it's such an imperative thing, is if you split on the road, don't you think that Miami's coming back to would then come to Philadelphia and say, well, we also want to split, and then we'll take our chances in a three-game series. It then becomes a best of three, where they play games 5 and 7 potentially in Miami. So even if you get the split in Miami, which would be phenomenal to come back to Philly with the series tied 1-1, you then have to take the next step, and the next step is to win three and four. Because if you only win one, it's just a three-game series at that point.
Right.
It doesn't change anything.
And if the news is good about Embiid, that 3 and 4 could be with him, or at least 4, maybe.
It would be substantial to obviously get him back for games 3 and game 4. And again, I'm going to preface this by saying I do not have any kind of medical background to say what I've said. And maybe it's a little out of practice for me to even say it. I just have a weird gut feeling, or had a weird gut feeling, that he might not return. This is tremendous news that it's potentially maybe back as early as game 3. I mean, that's substantial news. I want to get to his Eagles point. In fact, I want to talk about that a little bit on the other side, his Jalen Hurts point specifically, because we have not touched on A.J. Brown at all yet so far in the conversation. Before we do that, we'll talk about Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown specifically in the 1 o'clock hour. Let's go to Phoenixville. We'll talk to Andrew up next in the Fanatic. What's up, Andrew?
Good afternoon, Tyler. How are you?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you making the phone call.
Good. I want to say my Eagles point, and then I have two 76ers point, if I could. Now, with the Eagles, I'm extremely thrilled. I'm excited by this year's draft. He did really well. He surprised a lot of fans, surprised a lot of people, including myself. So with that said, I've told you this time and time again, I'm more of a realistic fan where when I look at players, I look how they can do in the NFL. When I look at the draft every year, they always show the video or the breakdown of each particular player that we pick in their collegiate games.
Yes.
And see how they do. Now, I feel that is, to me, an unfair statement, because even though they dominate those particular players in the collegiate games, we have no idea how they're going to play out in NFL games. So when we say, oh yeah, we're excited about this player, that player, this player, and you know, they could fill these holes. You know, there are a lot of players that we picked in the past. I'm just going to take Mike Mamula as an example. We thought he was going to be an exceptional linebacker. He was awful. He was a bust. So I guess to me, I'm more of a realistic person to say, yes, these two players that we got from Georgia, they look really good on the field, but can that excitement, that energy transfer to the NFL playing? Is that unfair for
me? No, it's not unfair to say. Every time you talk about the draft in any propensity, right, any kind of conversation that you have about the NFL draft, the NBA draft, the NHL draft, Major League Baseball, MLS, whatever the case may be, you're talking about projections, and you're talking about what this player, player X, could be for team Y in situation Z, right? You're talking about projections over the course of a of a decade or 5 years or whatever the case may be for a particular player. It's not unfair to have a wait and see approach, but you also have to you do have to have the foresight conversation to talk about a particular player at a particular position in a particular situation. There are guys in this year's draft that I think would have not benefited from being a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, let's say this player was selected by the Eagles. Just pick a player, for example. I think that it can't, like, off the top of my head, I'm trying to do it quickly. But the point being is,
was my Mike Mimola example bad? Or
No. What I'm saying is, you can have great expectations for a particular player, and they may not live up to them, which is fair. Like, not every player picked in the first round is a star, and not every player picked in the seventh round stinks, right? So you're only playing on projection, but I think that in the same breath, you also have to look at the particular position, the need of the position, the skill of the player, how they would fit on a particular defensive or offensive scheme. And in this particular instance, the talent level, the intangibles, and the drive of N'Kobe Dean is going to make him, I think, if he can stay healthy, a really good fit in this defense.
I agree with you as well. So getting to my Sixers point, I got that alert before I got on the air with you guys that about Joel Embiid. I think that's awesome news. I think that's great news. I think that even if he passes concussion protocol, and they say, you know what, you know, this orbital bone is not healed up, where he's like, no, I don't care what you guys think. I'm playing for this team. I think it's his say. I don't think it's the doctor's say.
I don't know if he's allowed to do that. I don't mean from like he can't or he won't. I literally mean I don't know if there's like any kind of like CBA conversation where he's allowed to discredit what the doctors have to say and say, I'm going to go play.
Okay. And then my last point is, you know, obviously if we don't win this series, a lot of people, a lot of fans, even Devon has said they are not fans of Doc Rivers.
Correct.
I just find that very coincidental that Jay Wright retired this year and all of a sudden a lot of people are now speaking up or have spoken about, oh, Jay Wright would be a great fit for any NBA team. Now all of a sudden he retires and a lot of people do want Doc Rivers out. I know that's way in the future. What is your thought process on that?
I don't think that I don't believe that Doc Rivers gets fired at this point. I don't think that happens. And B, I don't believe that Jay Wright is going to be an NBA coach. I don't have any sources. I don't have any inside information. That's just my thought process.
Because he will not. Weeks ago that he did leave the door open for an NBA.
Correct.
You know, so I'm thinking, all right, how coincidental is that? I mean,
I think it's pretty coincidental. And Andrew, appreciate the phone call. Really appreciate you joining us today. We just got to hit up against the break. I think it's totally coincidental that the timing of this all happened. I don't believe it to be a leaving for the NBA move. I don't think that to be true. If I'm wrong, I'll tell you. I'll admit to you that I'm wrong. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. Brian in Plymouth Meeting, going to get to you on the other side, give you all your time, and then it can be you. Matt Menard, Tyler Zulli, we take you until 4, right here on 97.5
The Fanatic. 97.5
The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Run. We're having too much fun with this music. Everybody else is probably like, dude, what are you doing? But having a little bit of fun with this music today is having some good bounce back conversation with the different bump music, if you will. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. Tyler Zulli, Matt Menard. We take you until 4 o'clock today. At that time, we will turn things over to Connor Thomas and Tom Alvord, who will take you through the rest of the evening. There are certain times there's certain times where I start to have that I'm getting old experience. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying I'm 28. I know I'm not old. I am not trying to be condescending or make anybody feel bad or anything like that. But there are certain things that happen, and I see certain things on social media where I feel old. Because on this day, 23 years ago, think about that. 23 years ago, I was 5. I was on my way to being 6. And on this day in 1999, one of the longest running cartoons of all time debuted. And that, of course, would be SpongeBob SquarePants. So I have a weird trajectory with the show SpongeBob. Because I was a big, big SpongeBob fan when it started. And then I hit that age. Do you know that age, Matt, where like nothing's cool? Like things that you liked as a kid aren't cool anymore. Like you hit that age where the cartoons you used to watch are stupid and the music you used to listen to is dumb and, you know, there's a lot of things when you hit that like early teenage years where you're like, I hate everything. You just become a moody teenager.
Sure.
So my brother, who is younger than me, was still in like SpongeBob watching age when I kind of hit that I hate everything age of like, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. So I got to a point where I had this gross disdain for SpongeBob because my brother liked it. And therefore, if my brother liked it, I didn't like it just because that's how siblings operate, right?
Yeah.
And then as I got older and I realized that it's, you know, you don't have to be cool all the time because I was never cool, but I thought I was cool. You don't have to be cool all the time. SpongeBob hit like a regrowth for me because it was my childhood. I grew up watching it. There are certain, you know, and when there's cartoons, when you maybe see something that you didn't, you hear a joke that you didn't pick up on as a kid, but it's got like, you know, adult humor behind it.
Oh, yeah.
You start to kind of pick up on those things.
That still happens.
It happens all the time. Oh, it happens too, all the time. But my point is, like, there was a regrowth for SpongeBob for me. So it's a very simple question, but I want to ask this to you within the next 2 hours. 23 years ago today, SpongeBob debuted. What is your favorite cartoon of all time? It's a tough question.
That is tough.
But everybody's got their answer. Now, I have mine that is like my go-to answer. And it, in fact, it, the funniest thing is it probably wasn't my favorite at the time. But now looking back, it was one of my favorites. And that is Rocket Power. I was a huge Rocket Power guy. Rocket Power, Hey Arnold, and SpongeBob were my three go-tos as a kid.
See, I was in a different era. I always loved like Thundercats, He-Man.
Okay, so yours was more of the action at cartoons than the comedy cartoons.
And Transformers, they had a cartoon.
Okay.
GoBots, which is like the Walmart version of Transformers, I think. Those type of cartoons. But I always liked the Tom and Jerry as well. I remember
some of the more classic ones.
Right, yeah. Okay. I remember always watching those growing up. I'd have to think if I had to choose one.
It's tough, I know.
Yeah,
it's really tough. Difficult. I also, too, as an adult, went back because I also didn't like comic books growing up. And let me rephrase that. I loved the X-Men series, the animated X-Men series, but I wasn't as big of a fan into like the Spider-Mans and the Batmans and things like that. It just wasn't what I got into. As more of an adult, I love the MCU. I love the Batman movies. Like, I got much more into those type of stories as I got older. So I went back and I've watched like the Star Wars Clone Wars show. I watched some of the Batman animated series because you realize, even though that they were, I guess, technically kid shows, there's a lot of story behind them that are, you can understand as an adult. But yeah, so I know it's a simple question, but it's got a little bit of a harder answer. What is your go-to, or what was your favorite cartoon as a kid? Because SpongeBob debuted 23 years ago today. 610-632-0975. Going to get to the Jalen Hurts conversation in just one moment, but let's go to Stratford. We'll talk to John next on The Fanatic. What's up, John?
What's up, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
How you doing?
Good. Appreciate you making the call.
I want to ask you, first of all, my favorite go-to back in the day, I'm 62 years
okay.
old, Bugs Bunny and all that
sure.
crap.
Sure, yeah.
So, but I love the Suns with the, oh God, I'm trying to think of all the Suns stuff. You know what I mean? When I was a kid, when they were kids, I loved just sitting there watching their stuff.
Sure.
It was probably the same. How old are you?
28.
Yeah, so you're my son's age, so you know.
We probably watched a lot of the same stuff.
Same thing.
Yep.
Exactly. So the next question I have an issue. I thought Boston Scott was, he's a good person to have on the team, I think.
I know what he provides you, right? He gives you a special teams
right,
boost. He
right.
gives you pass catching ability.
I know,
but
he's a good part of the team. I think that's what I thought.
I don't necessarily disagree. But one of the things that Andrew talked about that I also agree with is they need a bigger bodied running back, right? Like they had it a little bit last year with Jordan Howard. They've had it in years past.
Yeah, but
with,
Jordan Howard didn't work out too.
No,
well,
I mean
right?
he had a couple of really solid games before the injury again. But they've had it in years past with like LeGarrette Blount.
Boston Scott, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Boston
Go ahead.
Scott is he's an adorable guy. So.
Listen, I know that he's a good guy to have on the team. He provides you with that like scat back type stuff. But if you need a yard, if you need 2 yards, I need somebody who can run between the tackle and the guard.
He did that a couple times for us, didn't he?
Not nearly as much
as
Howard specifically. But they are missing.
But Howard was hurt too much.
And
so.
Sanders, I guess, would be the next guy in line, but he bounces it to the outside too much too.
We're not too. I love Sanders, believe me, but. I'm not too sure about him either, right?
Correct. And I'm not so sure he's here past next year. And that's why, to me, and I'm not saying Kennedy Brooks is the guy to replace him, but I need that bruising back.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I wouldn't. It's not like Boston Scott is the answer. I thought he would be a good backup or somebody.
Sure.
I would love to keep him because he's like a good backup. And he's older, but he's a tough little. You know what?
Sure. No, absolutely. And John, appreciate the phone call. Thanks for checking in with us today. If they keep a Kennedy Brooks, now I'm not saying that, and remember too, we're not having this conversation as somebody who's going to get substantial carries. But if they keep a Kennedy Brooks-esque player to be the bigger bodied back, right? Kennedy Brooks is, I'm trying to see how big he is off the top of my head. But let's just say, no surprise, he's larger than Boston Scott. He's 5'11", he's 215. He's got a little bit of beef to him compared to some of the other running backs on the team. If they keep a player like a Kennedy Brooks, it then comes down to, are you keeping Boston Scott or are you keeping Jason Huntley? Because we know the top two backs on the team are Miles Sanders and Kenny Gainwell. So if you're keeping four, one of those two guys, assuming you keep Brooks as your power back, are not going to make the team. And if they're going to do similar stuff, I'm going to take the guy who's on a cheaper deal. I'm going to take the guy who's younger. I'm going to take the guy who has less miles on his tires. And that's where, to me, if it comes down to it, Boston Scott becomes the odd man out. We're talking about projections for a team in August, in late August, early September, in May. But that was kind of why the conversation went that way, was because we were discussing the UDFA signing of Kennedy Brooks, who I think is a much better running back than not being drafted.
Yeah, that's good. We do need size. I like Boston Scott, too. I'm a fan of him, too. He does some good things out of the backfield. But, yeah, like you said, we do need more of a power back. That's where we succeeded. That's where our strength was. One of our strengths in 2017 is because we had that downhill back.
You had LeGarrette Blount.
Exactly. So, and we haven't had somebody like that dirt, like, well, Jordan Howard could be that, but he hasn't been able to stay on the field long enough.
And I'm not asking for a LeGarrette Blount to give me the bulk of the carries, right? Like, there were games where he was the primary feature back, right? You remember the Chargers game, he was great. There were games where he was the number one, a lot of games, where he was the number one running back on the team, especially once Doug realized he can't throw the ball 50 times a game. But I'm not looking for that style of running back where he's going to carry the bulk of the load for your rushing attack. I'm looking for somebody, when it's third and one and I need a yard, to get me a yard and a half or 2 yards. And if my options are Sanders, Gainwell, Scott, Huntley, and Brooks, if I'm going straight ahead, I'm taking Brooks. Now, granted, you can bounce it to the outside, and it's you get a lot of old school fans who are like, just go forward. Well, sometimes, you know, they always say that quote, the fastest path to any particular distance is a straight line. Well, when there's 340-pound defensive tackle standing in your way, that may not obviously always be the case. And so that's what I'm looking for from a fourth running back, is situational stuff. Gainwell's your pass catcher. Sanders is your bulk carry guy. And then you've got Huntley slash Scott to be your special teamer, scat back, guy who can do a little bit of everything out of the backfield. I need somebody with a little bit of bulk, and that might be where Kennedy Brooks comes in. At the benefit or the behest of Boston Scott. 610-632-0975. Jason in Chalfont's up next on the Fanatic. What's up, Jason?
How's it going, man?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you making the call.
Thank you. Now, I heard what you were saying about the cartoons. I totally understood that because I got injured. I was in bed rest for like 6 months.
Sure.
And I saw Naruto on the TV.
Okay.
And I was a kid. That was on sometimes, but I never really watched it fully. And then I fully got into it as I was on bed rest. And, like, learn so much more about, like, the, you know, life lessons that it gives.
Oh, sure. There's a lot of, like, it's not just, I mean, I know it's made primarily for kids, but there's a lot of life stuff. There's a lot of adult humor that is, you know, sprinkled in throughout these animated shows. And, you know, obviously we're not talking about, like, the Family Guys and the Simpsons. They're tailored more for adults. But, like, the shows that are kind of maybe considered tailored for kids, they're not just kids' shows.
Mm-hmm. They make it so it's for everyone. You
sure.
know?
Yeah,
everyone
exactly.
Enjoy it. But so my next thing was I'm real happy about the Eagles right now.
Sure.
I'm ecstatic about their draft. I couldn't have asked for – I would have done it all the same that he did, maybe except I would have picked N'Kobe Dean before the center, but he got him anyway.
Yeah, and you end up with – and I agree. That's something that Matt and I were talking about where he was at 51 – and we're like, oh, please, just Howie, one time, give me a linebacker. And you end up with him at 83, which is an even bigger steal.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't he get another one, too? He got a second one, right?
The second linebacker?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kyron Johnson.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm pretty happy in the picking up A.J. Brown. You know, there were a lot of, I'd say, like three games last season, fourth quarter, where Jalen Hurts put the ball directly into Jalen Reagor's hand.
Yep.
For a game-winning touchdown, and he blew it multiple times. So I'm hoping you just replace that with A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith in that position, and that's all those games are going to be wins for us, which would be a really good record.
But, and the beauty of having A.J. Brown past what you know that he can do, right? You know he's a good pass catcher. You know he gets to the apex of the ball in the air very well. You know he's going to fight and all that. Past all of the stuff that we know about A.J. Brown, one of the things that I'm really looking forward to is when you have a receiver of that caliber, it helps to put everybody in a slot down, right? So now in year two, you've got Devontae Smith, who could be a wide receiver one for a long time, might be your wide receiver two. You have Quez Watkins, who could be a burner, just be a burner. He could get in the slot. He could create in space. And it allows all of your pass catchers and all of your skill position players to kind of be in a better matchup for their skill set than they had a season ago.
Totally. Totally. I'm really excited. I think we're going to be stomping people this year.
I don't know. And Jason, thanks for the phone call. Really appreciate it. I don't know about stomping people. I don't know how good this – I think this team – I said before the draft, I think this team is going to take a step back. And I don't mean from 9 to 4, but I think that it would be certainly possible prior to the draft that this team goes from 9 to 7 or 9 to 8. It's a little bit more of a difficult schedule. You're not at the benefit of playing, we think, obviously you can't predict injuries, but you're not at the benefit of playing Jake Fromm this year or playing, who was the guy that played for Washington on Tuesday night? You remember they played Tuesday night because of COVID? It was, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. It was a scrub. I mean, no disrespect to the guy. As Stephen A. Smith once said, the guy can't play. No disrespect, but he's not an NFL quarterback. They're not going to have that benefit this year where they get the opportunity to play Cooper Rush. And
we do get to play that scrub Carson Wentz twice.
So the benefit of playing Carson Wentz twice is hopefully being able to force him into a lot of turnovers. The downside is he still can make some good throws.
Yeah, he's still got an arm.
He's still got the arm. He still is a good playmaker, but he's not the quarterback that we once thought he was going to be.
No.
The point being is, prior to the draft, I would not have been shocked if this team took a step back. Based on A, the schedule. Based on B, I think they may have overachieved a little bit based on their talent level on the roster. Now post-draft, sans the secondary, which still needs help, I think that this team is poised to be in a similar place that they were a season ago. Somewhere between 8 and 10 wins is doable, I believe, with the team that they're about to put in place. There is so much intrigue for me with this team from different schematic things that the defense can put together, from how Devontae Smith is going to thrive because of A.J. Brown, how Dallas Goedert is going to thrive because of A.J. Brown, how much the run game gets more respected than it did in the past, or how much it is able to benefit because you've got legit pass catchers now at all three of your primary pass catching positions, namely wide receiver one, wide receiver two, tight end one. There's a lot of intrigue on upside for this Eagles team.
Oh, for sure. I think just the fact that they're adding A.J. Brown is going to garner more attention towards him, which is going to give Devontae Smith more one-on-one matchups, because you're not going to have a choice.
Going to give Quez Watkins more one-on-one matchups.
And Goddard.
Going to give Goddard more one-on-one matchups.
Him.
It's going to give Gainwell opportunities to catch passes on. I expect Kenny Gainwell to line up in like 6 different positions on the field this year. And I don't mean like playing tackle. I mean like slot, put him out wide, off both hip.
He could do like a Brian Westbrook role.
Yeah, I think
so. He used to line up.
I don't believe he's going to be that skilled, but
well,
I think
not that skilled,
but the role, sure, absolutely.
As far as role, yeah.
There is a lot of intrigue. That's the furthest I'll go, is there's a lot of intrigue to this team, both offensively and defensively. Before we hit the break, let's get to Dave in Center City up next from the Fanatic. What's up, Dave?
Yo, what's up, Tyler?
I'm doing well. How are you? Appreciate you making the call.
Striking similarities between Doug Peterson's second-year Eagles and Sirianni's second-year Eagles. Wentz had that 1 year under his belt.
Yep.
When they finished 7-9.
Took a big leap.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts now has a year under his belt.
Yep.
Nicky reminds me so much of Doug Peterson with the snap decision-making, little bit of riverboat gambling. 13-4
wow.
is what I see, and I'd be very shocked if they don't replicate what Doug Peterson's second-year Eagles do.
I think the difference between Doug Peterson's second year and this team in particular. Now, there's a lot of players that are similar. Fletcher Cox is still here. Brandon Graham's still here. You had the veterans in place who were ready to make impacts. Malcolm Jenkins was ready to make an impact. Alshon Jeffrey was ready to make an impact. Zach Ertz was ready to make an impact. Jason Peters, when he was healthy, was a big impact tackle. I know that they have younger talent, and I'm not sure that it's ready to come together in that capacity just yet.
All right, good point. But let me dovetail. Who's going to be the Sixers version of Nick Foles as long as Embiid is out?
Well, I think that it's one of two. Now, the obvious is James Harden, but I'm not quite sure that is going to come to fruition more so than what we've seen. I think the two candidates in that particular instance are Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris.
All right, correct. But still, if I'm Spoelstra, even if it's the old James Harden, let him get his 44 points. Don't let anyone else score.
Certainly
but
fair.
I don't even think James Harden's capable of scoring 44 points in a game today.
I'm not sure that he is capable of scoring 44. I do think that he is capable of producing, you know, upwards of 45 or 50 points. And what I mean by that is, you know, off the assist, rebound and start the break. I think that he's capable of giving you 44 contributable points between points and assists.
Yeah, real quick, and I know Club Tyrone's going to be upset. Okay. Embiid was assaulted by, what's his name?
Siakam.
Yeah. But the bottom line is Embiid should not have been on the floor at that time.
I don't necessarily disagree with you in that sentiment. And Dave, appreciate the phone call as always. Thanks for joining us today. I don't necessarily disagree with you in that sentiment. I think that there was enough of a lead for the starters to be off the floor. But I will say this, much like Tyrone talked about yesterday on his show from 9 to noon, there is that propensity as we as Sixers fans, because of the past transgressions of the games against the Clippers and the Denver Nuggets and the two against the Atlanta Hawks in the playoffs a season ago, where if it would have been almost insurmountable and it would have been unbelievably inexcusable, but should something catastrophic had happened in that game, we would have, as a city, not let Doc Rivers coach Game 7. Like, it would have been that, people would have been that angry, and I know that it was out of, I felt that it was out of reach. Do you feel that the score was out of reach at that point?
I do. I don't think there was a way that they were going to come back.
Right.
I understand being
but
cautious.
That's the caution that you insert, or you have to insert, because of the fact that you are known across the city, not just you as a coach, but your team is known as a team that has coughed up multiple large leads in the last 12 months.
And I don't think,
fair or unfair, that's what right. you've been, that's what your team has been labeled as.
And if he didn't get a fracture to the face, this wouldn't be a conversation. Nobody would be saying, well, he could have got hurt, he should have been out, because nobody really mentioned that until this fracture.
Until we knew that it was, well, and here's the thing, there were people that said, hey, he's going to have, like, and I know that, the one thing that I want to say, before we hit the break, the one thing that I wish people would stop saying is, oh, I knew he broke his face. Like, there are, I don't know how many bones are in your face, like around your facial structure. I'm not, again, we're not medical professionals. Don't come to us for medical advice. It would be a terrible life decision on your part.
Yes, please don't.
But this, oh, he broke his face, is so, like, it's almost Neanderthal-like, where it to say that, like, you have to allow him, give him some respect to about his injury. It just seems so basic to me. He has an orbital injury. That's what it is. Don't give me this, like, lowbrow, oh, Joel Embiid broke his face. I know it sounds so stupid for me to say that, but I can't let that go anymore. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. Shannon and George, I want to give you your full time, so if you don't mind hanging through the break, we will get to you first. We do have to get to that Jalen Hurts point that we wanted to get into, and I've got some tweets that I want to read as well from some of you that are listening, but may not have the opportunity to call the show. That's Matt Minarek. I'm Tyler Zulli. We take you for another 90 minutes right here on 97.5
The Fanatic. 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it now. I was trying to think of who this was, and I couldn't pick it up right away. This is Dream Theater. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. Tyler Zuli, Matt Menark, we take you until 4 o'clock today. This weekend's programming is brought to you by the Gourmet Egg Roll Company. Go to GetEggRolls.com or call your food distributor for Philly's favorite appetizer. Big Philly flavor in the palm of your hand. Cheesesteak egg roll sounds good right now.
Oh, I love cheesesteak egg roll.
Cheesesteak egg roll. You know what I wonder if they have? I'm sure they probably do because this is kind of like an in thing recently. I wonder if they have a buffalo chicken egg roll.
I think they do. There were some.
That sounds good.
There were some little flyers in here a little while ago, and I think I saw a buffalo chicken one.
That would sound good. I'm a big buffalo chicken guy. Buffalo chicken, barbecue chicken, those kind of toppings for like an egg roll, for a pizza. That sounds good.
And of course, the
classic but never fails you, the old cheesesteak egg roll.
With the spicy ketchup.
Oh, for like sure, yes. You gotta get the spicy ketchup.
I went somewhere and they gave me, I think it was marinara sauce, which is great like with mozzarella sticks, but with
that. You gotta go with the spicy ketchup.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, me and you might have to call up our friends at the Gourmet Egg Roll Company and pick some up for the ride home.
I like it.
610-632-0975. I want to get to a couple of tweets before we get to Shannon and then Mitch, who is back joining us. Jonesy Wales tweets in, "There's no way Doc could have known that Nurse Siakam would intentionally hurt one of his players. They concussed him and broke his eye socket. I'm sure Joe felt like his face was smashed, especially with a brain injury." If I didn't make this, if I didn't make what I was saying about the broken face comment clear enough, let me reemphasize that. I wasn't saying that we shouldn't have said that it was a broken bone or they shouldn't have said it was a broken bone and a concussion right away. What I was saying was, I feel like we should use our words more carefully and treat his injury with more decorum to say that it is a mild concussion and to say that it is a broken orbital bone as opposed to saying he broke his face. Although Joel Embiid himself did an interview with NBA TV, I believe it was, Matt, did an interview with NBA TV after the game, and he used those words. So let's hear from Joel Embiid himself post Game 6 in an interview with NBA TV.
We are pleased to be joined by the big man himself, Joel
Gus Johnson,
Embiid.
How many stitches you getting, man?
I don't know. I think he broke my face. I'm serious. Yeah. I think he might have broken my face, but he's all good. It's the playoffs.
So I know that he said, "I think he might have broken my face too," but I don't want it to be. What I was trying to say was, when it comes to injuries, we should have some decorum when we speak about it because we owe it to that player to not be like a jerk about it, if you will. And I know he used that phrase too. 610-632-0975, but I'm going to try to stay away from it if I can. I don't know if you've got the Celtics-Milwaukee series on right now. Guys are getting beat up in this game. Marcus Smart had to leave the game what looked like maybe a shoulder injury, and now I think Robert Williams is on the floor. He's like crumpled over in pain. Guys are getting really, it must be a pretty physical game. I'm only obviously looking up during breaks and stuff like that, but I know that Marcus Smart had to walk off with what looked to be an apparent shoulder injury, and now Williams is seemingly grabbing the hand or maybe the wrist. Physical series it looks like so far. 610-632-0975. Dev tweets in, says, "If it's true," he quote tweets Adrian Wojnarowski's story about the optimism surrounding Joel Embiid maybe returning in games 3 or 4. He said, "If this is true, I need Maxi, Harden, and Tobias to leave it all out on the floor like it's game 7 of the finals for games 1 and game 2. And I agree with you, Dev. I think that you're going to need you're probably going to need two of those three guys to amplify their game in games 1 and 2 if you want to take one of the two in Miami. The next step, though, becomes splitting the series in Miami is one thing. The next step after that becomes you have to take care of business at home because otherwise you're now just in a 3-game series with the Miami Heat with them having 2 of the 3 games in their home building. 610-632-0975. Going to get to the Jalen Hurts conversation in just one moment, but Shannon has been hanging patiently in Georgia. What's up, Shannon?
Hey, Tyler. Good to talk to you again, buddy.
Good to talk to you as always.
Hey, I'm calling to do something unpopular, and I'm going to give Howie Roseman some praise.
Oh, I don't think it's unpopular this weekend. I think he did a really good job.
I've been an unpopular guy because I've been saying for the last 3 years this guy's been doing a hell of a job. He had a couple of dud picks. We know who they are, the two receivers, but outside of that, you look at his, you match up what he's done the last 3 years in the drafts against most GMs in the NFL, and you got to move him at the top of the list. And it's not just player to player. Look at the picks. Look what he did I own a small business. If this guy was my, ops manager or business development guy, I'd give him a raise right now. Look what he's done with the Miami trade or the Saints trade. He gets more value for players and picks than the other teams do. I don't know how he's
correct. I mean, think about just the one that they made this weekend. They got A.J. Brown for a 1 and a 3, right, which was the 18th pick. There is no world in which Marquise Brown, and no disrespect to Marquise Brown, I think he's a good player, is only 5 picks worse than A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
Like, A.J. Brown is a much better wide receiver than Marquise Brown is. And they got the 18th pick.
Yeah,
and the Cardinals got the 20 or gave up the 23rd.
Oh, they gave up the 23rd. Look what Miami gave up to get Hill.
Tyreek Hill, a lot.
They're paying him. I mean, it's insane. You got to value that. You got the best receiver base in the draft. You got, in my opinion, I'm jealous. I'm a Georgia guy. Okay, but you mean to tell me that the Dick Butkus Award winner, middle linebacker, leader of possibly the greatest defense in the history of
one of the best one of the best college football defenses ever.
To me, pound for pound, of what he gives you, I thought he was the best player in college football last year. But that's my opinion. I could be a little biased. But you cannot sit here and tell me that there was another linebacker in this country better than him playing against the type of competition that he's playing against in the SEC week in and week out. There's just no way I will buy that at all. And then I'm looking at Jalen Hurts now. The city was screaming. But when Howie got rid of Carson Wentz, oh man, we're going to be just in cellar cap hell, man. This kid, he ain't ready. He ain't all this crap we heard. But people got to realize, man, players, for some reason, want to play with Jalen Hurts. And that makes a huge difference. I don't care what anybody says. Guys want to play with Jalen Hurts.
It certainly seems that way. I know that he and A.J. Brown are very, very tight, but there's no doubt in my mind that Jalen Hurts was a driving factor to this trade happening.
Oh, absolutely. So there's value. There's value down the line. So we got a great draft, in my opinion. And then you got 2 1s and a 2 in 2024. Are you kidding me? That's incredible, man. So I mean, the only thing is now is I can make the argument that outside of maybe the Rams or Tampa, they put together the most talented roster so far in the NFC.
I think they're going to put together one of the more talented rosters in years to come. I'm not sure if it's there just yet. And Shannon, thanks so much for the phone call. Really appreciate you joining us today. I'm not sure it's ready to compete with those upper echelon teams yet. But what Howie Roseman has done is given himself the longest window to succeed by not only A, picking players that we think are going to be contributing pieces to this team in the last two drafts specifically, but also, like Shannon was talking about, getting value from the Saints, getting value from the Dolphins, getting value from different trades to give themselves the longest window of success come draft day in 2023 and 2024. I believe two things can be true at once. I believe that the selection, I'm not going to back down from me saying this because all of us felt this way. The selection of Jalen Hurts at the time was strange, right? We all thought that Carson Wentz was the franchise quarterback. We didn't think that you needed a backup at 53. Now flash forward to today, it is evident that guys like A.J. Brown want to play for the Eagles. And not to say that he had a choice, because if you get traded, you go where you're traded to. But there was certainly, I think, influence in this trade because Jalen Hurts is the Eagles quarterback. And A.J. Brown is tight with Jalen Hurts. Guys want to play with Jalen Hurts because he's a natural leader. Now, and this gets us to the point that we're going to discuss, we were talking about discussing in just in the past segment, the onus now is on Jalen Hurts. We said last year, or at least I said last year, I can't speak for other people, but I said last year that the Eagles were in a good position to allow Jalen Hurts to be the starting quarterback from start to finish. Sans an injury, he was going to be the guy from week one to whatever week the season ended. And it happened to end on wild card weekend. And that was the only way, unless he was cataclysmically bad or Herculean good, and you could make that decision earlier than the full length of the season, giving him the entirety of the season was the only way to understand, or at least better understand, what type of quarterback, what caliber of quarterback you had at your disposal on a rookie contract. They allowed him to do that. He had some failures. He had some successes. He led them to a playoff berth. He led them to a wild card, right? And I thought, for the most part, he was more good than he was bad. Now in year two, now with year two, or a full season under his belt, now in year two, with a wide receiver one at his disposal, with perhaps two wide receiver ones at his disposal, a tight end one who I believe is somewhere between the sixth and tenth best tight end in the NFL in Dallas Goedert, an offensive line that, while yes, it's getting older, is still very, very strong, a run game that succeeded when it was utilized properly a season ago, all of these things added together in year three, but full year two for Jalen Hurts, the onus now is on him. He needs to show that he is the guy. And I'm not saying like Dave said, you could see a 2017-esque leap from this team. I'm not there. I'm not going there yet. I'm not saying he needs to go from making the playoffs to going to the Super Bowl. I'm talking about him individually. I need to see a leap in numbers. I need to see a leap in accuracy. I need to see a leap in decision-making. And all of those things, his numbers were really good. I think his decision-making at times was really good. And now that I know he's got a full season under his belt, I'm very, very excited to see what kind of next step he can take as the Eagle signal caller, as the leader of the offense, with all of the pieces that he has around him now, with a coach who has settled in as the offensive coordinator. Now I'm really excited to see what Jalen Hurts is going to be able to do, but the onus is on him. I don't want to call it total make or break type season for Jalen Hurts, but I think it's about as close to it as you can possibly get, especially considering the fact that the Eagles have multiple first round picks next year in the draft, and it is considered a much better quarterback draft class. He doesn't have to give me MVP numbers. He doesn't have to give me the greatest season of all time. He doesn't have to lead him to a Super Bowl or a title, a Super Bowl appearance or anything like that. I'm not saying that I need that Herculean leap in year two, but I do believe that now with all the pieces that are put in place for this team, with the opportunity to grow as an organization, the onus does go on your quarterback. Fair or unfair, that's where we're at with this. 610-632-0975. All right, let's try this one more time. We're going to go to East Windsor. We'll talk to Mitch on the Fanatic. What's up, Mitch?
How's it going, Tyler?
There you are. How are you, Mitch?
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
People,
no worries.
Two people have to hold in. Two people. My mistake. Well, you know how my mind works. And, look, I wasn't driving.
No, but, you're good. No worries.
Thank you. Good trade for your Eagles. I got to say the Falcons did well. I told you Drake London would be the first wide receiver taken.
You did, and I told you I don't like him all that much, but he is the first receiver off the board.
They do have Pitts. They have some quarterback competition. I like them both. I like these Bulldogs, man. What, 15? I say too bad they didn't draft. He was taken in the third round. Spiller and the kid Zamir White is the running back.
Yeah,
and I also like Rashad White, too, from Arizona State, but you know I'm a Pac-12 guy.
Yes.
He's got some size, and he catches the ball. So I still think you need to take another running back.
Well, they did pick somebody up in with UDFAs. They did pick Kennedy Brooks from Oklahoma up.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, this is part of your job. You're getting paid, well, not enough. Well, I don't want to talk about money, right? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. You're good. But looking at this draft, you are correct. The Falcons had a nice draft. And you know, I'm not a big London guy, but whether you like him or not, they got their pass catcher at 8. Arnold Ebiketie is a guy who I think could be an immediate impact pass rusher in the NFL. They got an undersized but really, really talented linebacker in Troy Anderson. As you said, Desmond Ridder, D'Angelo Malone from Western Kentucky. They had a really good draft. You're correct on that.
And then they signed Marcus Mariota.
Correct, think, yes.
I mean, the Raiders never use him, but I think the Raiders are set. But I wanted to say, Sam Howell, they should have taken a flyer on Sam Howell. They could have gotten him in the fourth round.
Who?
The Eagles, but the Washington team got him. I think Sam Howell is going to be Carson Wentz. But you got to be hoping you're going to be, you guys, I'll leave one more thing. You got to be, you know, pretty good. Otherwise, you're going to lose out on DJ Uiagalelei, the kid from Ohio State.
Uiagalelei, yeah.
How do you say that name again? And of course, the young kid from Alabama. How do you say his name again for me?
It's Uiagalelei.
I'll practice on my own time.
Okay.
I don't want to take any more time.
Thanks, Mitch.
But, you know, he has a brother. I don't know if he signed with USC. I hope he did.
I don't know. Yeah, I know that he was still in consideration. Mitch, appreciate the phone call. Thanks for checking in with us today. The Falcons did have a good draft. And by the way, the Eagles were not going to take a quarterback. And I'm not, I thought they might draft a quarterback. I'm honestly, when they had all their picks, right, because they had 10 to begin the draft, I thought they might actually draft a quarterback late, like sixth round projection type quarterback, somebody of the ilk of EJ Perry, like they picked up in the UDFAs, somebody like a Skylar Thompson, maybe from Kansas State, something along those lines, to just give them another arm in the room. There was no way, even with him falling to the fifth round, they were going to take a player like Sam Howell. I don't think he is going to be, I used to be a huge Sam Howell fan. I don't think he's going to be an NFL starting quarterback, but there's no way that they were going to bring in anybody that had any kind of merit coming into the draft. And no disrespect to use the word merit to some of the other guys, but that wouldn't make a ton of sense to me. For Mitch, really quickly, before we move on, the quarterback at Clemson, because he's going to be a conversation piece, a big topic of conversation is the quarterback class. It's supposed to be better than the one that you saw, you know, with C.J. Stroud at the top, with Bryce Young at the top. The quarterback for Clemson, his last name is Uiagalelei. That is how you pronounce it. It's not as hard as it may seem to you. That is how you pronounce his last name.
Sounds pretty hard.
Just get used to
Uiagalelei.
Just get used
Uiagalelei?
To if Jalen Hurts does not play well and he plays well at Clemson, just get used to the butchering of a quarterback's name on these airwaves. Because if we're being fair with ourselves, this city is not very good at names.
They have to give him a nickname, like Big V. I mean, nobody's going to say
Halapuli Vaitai Vaitai.
Sure. We'll go with that.
Here's the thing. It's not difficult to sit down and watch tape or to hear somebody else talk about a player and get their name correctly.
Right.
All players, all coaches, all people that we're going to speak about on this forum or when you have conversations about them with your friends and family, they deserve to get their names pronounced correctly. Like, that is a basic thing that players and coaches deserve when we come on these airwaves.
Oh, yeah.
It is not fair for me to come on the airwaves and be like, oh, yeah, the quarterback from Clemson. Like, it's my job, if I'm going to talk about him, to learn how to pronounce his name correctly. 610-632-0975. Before we hit the break, let's get the Lance in Arizona up next to the Fanatic. What's up, Lance?
Hey, so I wanted to talk about Embiid after the Eagles point. Like,
sure.
I love the fact that their draft was good, and the fact that they got A.J. Brown for the value of what that was really good.
Yep.
This is the problem that you have with it. So dating back to 2019, the Eagles had 14 picks before they traded some of them in the first three rounds. They spent six of them to get wide receivers, which comes back to the point, because you screwed up Jaw and Rager, you had to spend a first and a third and then another first and third just to address the receiver position that should have been fixed 2 years ago. And the problem that becomes is you look at their secondary. Their secondary is bad besides Slay, because you had to spend so much more capital because you kept screwing up one position to fix that one position. So when people go watch the team next year and they're like, man, this secondary sucks, you're going to sit there and be like, well, if you didn't spend almost half your first, second, and third round picks to try to get wide receivers to make your offense better because you didn't do your job properly the first time, that's the reason. It's not like their secondary, long-term, they have solutions. Like, Darius Slay is getting older, so you're going to have to replace him. You have to get a corner on the other side. You got to get safeties. You don't have any long-term possibilities at safety. So, like, and which then compounds the issue, is you've got to hope Jalen Hurts becomes the quarterback you want for the long-term future, because next year, I don't think they're going to sit on their hands and not go get the quarterback of the future if Jalen Hurts isn't the guy.
Well, so yeah, that's correct, right? Like, if they believe Hurts is not the guy, they're going to use their draft capital to find a way to get that guy. Here's the thing, Lance, when you talk about the use of six picks to get your wide receivers, I understand that it's frustrating to have to select from behind. And they've done that with selections like Arthega Whiteside and with Jalen Reagor. You have to select from behind because you're not expediting your choices when you have them, right? If you have Jefferson, you probably don't need to trade up for Devontae Smith or whatever the case might be. However, we're at that point, then you're going with the revisionist history thing, and you have to just make the best of your past transgressions. And with that, the Eagles have done a good job of fixing their mistakes and getting to where they need to be.
I 100% agree. They did a good job fixing the mistakes that they got themselves into. Like, the problem is that you can't keep making mistakes. It wasn't just the wide receivers, because they've had other mistakes. That Dillard pick is going to look even worse because they're not going to get anything out
correct
of them. And Davion Taylor, you don't know what he is. So it wasn't just that they spent.
But Davion Taylor was a fifth round pick. You're right. He was a third. I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Sean Bradley. You're correct.
You can't have that many misses and then have to put it into one position, because now your secondary is what it is because of everything you did. Even though you had a great draft, and even last draft was a great draft, the problem is that your secondary, it's going to be so far behind to fixing it, because if we go into next offseason, hypothetically, if Jalen Hurts isn't the guy, you're not fixing your cornerback and safety position next year either.
Well, you're not fixing the safety position in the first round anyway. They've made that abundantly. Yeah, you made that abundantly clear by not taking Kyle Hamilton and going with Jordan Davis instead.
I think they like to spend money on safety in free agency, because I think they think it's better value than taking a safety high, especially because if
certainly fair
a decade, they missed on those picks. So anyways, with Joel Embiid, there's three culprits for what happened to his face. Like, Siakam is the biggest one. The fact that he was still in there is another one. But the fact that the Sixers didn't handle their business in Game 4 and Game 5 and came out with no energy and didn't win those games put themselves in a position for him to get hurt in a Game 6. If you handled your business in Game 4 and Game 5 and done what you should have done, there's no Game 6 for Siakam to come and hit you with an elbow. So, like, part of this goes back to the Sixers not handling their business when they should have handled their business, and he's probably not have a broken face right now, and you're not worried about if he's coming back Game 3 or Game 4.
No, and Lance, appreciate the phone call. I understand that sentiment, right, where you cannot tell me that Lance doesn't have a right, that I don't have a right to be angry, that a Game 6 got played. There should not have been a Game 6. We all agree on that. I don't think that within the construct of Game 6, you can blame there being a Game 6 for Embiid getting hurt. Is that fair to differentiate the two? Like, there should not have been a Game 6. And since there was a Game 6, the fact that there was a Game 6 is not the reason that Pascal Siakam threw an elbow.
Right. Each game is its own game. You can't... I agree, too. Yeah, it shouldn't have been a Game 6. You can't go back and coulda, woulda, shoulda. But, yeah, you can't blame Game 4 and 5 for that elbow itself. The fact that they had to play those games, okay, and I see Lance's point as well, but, yeah, you have to separate those games itself.
610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. That voice you just heard, that's Matt Minark. I'm Tyler Zulli. We take you until 4 o'clock. Right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.